Good morning and welcome to 42 Minutes. This is Alan Green. Today we've got a little shuffling of the seats here. We're going to, myself and Doug are going to put Will, your regular co-host, in the hot seat. We're talking about a short film that he made, and you can watch that. What you should do right now is pause this and go over to afewshotstoshaman.blogspot.com. If you're listening to this in the archives, you'll find it August 2012. The post is called Psycho Cinematic Analysis. You can also watch this at vimeo.com/4738166. There will be links in the show notes. So please pause that now. Watch the film. It's a great film. And then we'll come back and that's what we'll be discussing.
Awesome. Are you back?
Welcome back. I think welcome back. Good morning, everybody. So we also have with us we have the creator of the video, Will Morgan, and we have the subject of Will's psycho-cinematic analysis, Andras Jones. Good morning, everybody.
Hello.
Morning.
I've got a question for Will. Was this process different than any of the other sync films that you've made?
Actually, can we go back just in case so we can just let people know what it is that we're talking about?
Sure.
We just watched it.
I know, but just in case someone is happening to just listen and isn't actually watching it. Will, could you tell what this film is?
Well, basically, it is what we might call a synchromistic investigation of Andras's career. I would say entire career, but I didn't get everything that he has done. And I basically studied his film to find how his movies interrelate to each other. As far as being different than any other project that I have done, I think the biggest thing that makes it different is my relationship during the investigation with Andras himself. It was extremely eye-opening as far as piecing together what we've done here, or piecing together what he has done, I would say, or what we do here. I think that's what I'm trying to say. Like, as far as synchromysticism goes, I mean, it's kind of a vague subject. I mean, it's, I think, probably intentionally not been given a definition. And for me, at least, being able to say, hey, Andras, what's up with, you know, all the fucking mirrors or all of the redheads or all of this or all of that in your career, and his reaction to that was, it was just mind-blowing.
Before we go into the sort of nitty-gritty here, I just want to ask this. I mean, so Doug mentioned other sync films. There have been a slew of films made over the last few years sort of following a specific actor's thread, you know, finding out what they resonate with and kind of exploring those themes. But I think what makes this so different, and I wonder if you would respond to this, Will, what probably made it very appealing is now you have someone where you can actually get a response from and find out, you know, so instead of making a video about Jim Carrey and how, oh, he seems to resonate with Osiris, you can essentially say, hey, Jim Carrey, what do you think of Osiris? Does this seem to resonate for you? And get that response. Doing that with Andras, I assume that was very appealing to you.
It was. Yeah, it was. I mean, actually being able to talk to the actor allows some clarity of thought, because when you're looking at it, you're kind of taking notes, or at least how I would investigate a movie. I would kind of take mental notes. Okay, you know, that's the third spider, for instance, that I've seen in this flick. Maybe there's something that has to do with spiders. Not everything that you take a mental note about develops, if that makes any sense. I mean, sometimes there are some wild goose chases or blind alleys or whatnot, but being able to talk to Andras allowed me to find ultimate relevance, or if is that clear?
Relevance.
And how about you, Andras? Did the things that Will found, did they speak to you?
Oh yeah. I mean, as I said to Will, it felt like having my brain operated on while I was awake. Throughout, I'm a person who pays attention to synchronicity, and I've always had a sense in my films that there was something strange at work, in that even though they were films that I didn't choose, or in a lot of cases weren't ones that I would have even have liked, that the themes seemed to line up with me. But, you know, we all think everything revolves around us. So I just sort of accepted that that was just part of being an actor. But then to have Will dig into it and find not only a lot of the synchronicities and connections to my life that I had found and recognized them, but to also reveal things about me that I, like, personal syncs for me with my family, with my, you know, just in relationship to myself and the world. It was very interesting. I think that any actor, I think you could do this with any actor, and it would have a psychologically beneficial effect, or I suppose potentially a psychologically negative effect if the person who was making the film had some sort of weird agenda. But it does, I found it to be very psychologically potent and actually pretty healing, especially as an actor whose work is generally, you know, on the margins, to have it put front and center and taken seriously, not as film, because I don't think it needs to be, it should be taken seriously as film, because most of them aren't really good films, but taken seriously as in film, as a medium for exploring sort of larger issues. Like, what does it mean when we film someone and we freeze time and then we all pay attention to it over time? It's very interesting. I think it's a brilliant film. I think actually one thing I want to say about the film is that by repurposing all of these lesser films, I think Will has made, well, he's made the only, one of the only films that I've been in that I feel like I can watch and enjoy.
So this is the, your most favorite film that you've ever been in?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So what about the idea of a grand conspiracy, Andras? Can you speak to that? I mean, have you guys arrived at a point where that's absolutely ridiculous, or is there...
You mean grand conspiracy, like which grand conspiracy are you talking about?
The idea that somehow there's an orchestrating force, a human orchestrating force, and they put you into these roles to create this...
Yeah, that's just nonsense. I mean, really, I mean... If that's the case, you mean you'd need a team of handlers for every actor. I mean, what I would say is that if that much energy was put into my career, you would think that there would have been something else. Like, there is no upside to that because no one's paying attention to my career. So why manipulate my career? You see, it's just like there are programming forces. There are forces that are probably programming, I mean, certainly programming the networks, programming releases, but the idea of a grand conspiracy that involves my films, you know, it's like a grand conspiracy involving your bowel movements. It's just so inconsequential to the world. Why would anyone put that energy in? And if they put it into me, then you'd think they'd have to put it into every actor. Or that they're time travelers and they know that sometime in the future, Radio 8-Ball is going to be huge, and so they better start programming me from the age of 18. And if that's the case, then sure, yeah, the aliens might be on that, you know, if they have that awareness. But that's a huge leap. And I think it's more, I think it's more valuable, more reasonable to think that there is a feedback loop that gets created when we freeze time and then pay attention to it. And we're at the very beginning of exploring that. And films like this are part of that exploration. But I think it's more of a psychological exploration than a, you know, a search for the grand conspiracy. I think there are a lot of different conspiracies. I think the idea that there's a grand conspiracy that includes everything is, I don't know, kind of like, well, just like a childish fairy tale. I mean, there's a psychological route for that kind of thinking, I think. So,
well, one of the things that I had in mind when making this film was to make the point that it doesn't really matter if there is a conspiracy or anything. The thing that bugs me about Sync is there seems to be camps that develop too quickly. And the individuals take either one side or the other without – they totally negate like the maybe language. So you have like individuals who only think this has to do with joy and this only has to do with this cosmic consciousness being shined upon as far as the human race goes or whatnot, or it's all just gay conspiracy, Illuminati wanting everybody to buttfuck everybody else. I mean, but there's no allowance for the other viewpoint. And I'm using those just basically as two extremes. I'm not saying anything against either of those points of view. I'm just saying that they're two big and vibrant entities or camps or cults in, as far as the Sync community goes. But they're both valid, if that makes sense. There's no reason to say, well, this is proof that there's no conspiracy. As far as Andras Jones go, I think it's silly to think that there's any conspiracy involved at all. I mean, it's an eclectic hodgepodge career. I mean, there's how many different foreign directors were you involved with, Andras?
Well, Rennie Harlan was Finnish. Michel Schottenberg is Austrian. Chi Wai Lee is Chinese.
So you're just – it's just yeah. a hodgepodge of influence. But at the same time, there's individuals, as the film shows, that Andras has had direct contact with as far as actors – who could very easily be said to be involved in conspiracy. There's, you know, Viggo Mortensen, there's even Remy to a certain degree, who did
Rennie Harlan, who directed right. Nightmare 4.
Right.
And also Cliffhanger and Die Hard 2.
Right. He went on to have a very productive career. I mean, he had some bust in there, like Cutthroat Island and so forth and so on, but as far as being a big name in the business, he made it to a certain degree. I mean, there's – I hope individuals, when they watch Psychocinematic Analysis, keep that in mind, that asking if there's conspiracy is reductionist in my opinion. Like saying that there's only one source for the reason of this is – it keeps your eyes closed to the full potential. But now, there are things in Andras Jones's career that point towards conspiracies. For instance, in the Attic Expeditions, Andras is told that he has been in a coma or something for some years. I think it's 3 or 4 years or something like that. And the date that they tell him that it is November 23rd. Which, of course, is the day after Kennedy was killed. And his appearance in Good Morning, Miss Bliss, of course, he's in John F. Kennedy Middle School or whatever. And then Nightmare on Elm Street. Elm Street was the street that Kennedy was killed on. And my point in saying that is that there's broader aspects as far as an individual sink. You can go a couple of different directions. The film, Psychocinematic Analysis, focused on, I believe, or I tried to focus on the personal relevance of – I mispronounced that word again.
Relevance.
That brings up another point. The relationship I had with Andros was important as far as having an editor goes.
Well, I think that what's – I mean, the fact that you really focused on the dreams and the psychology, which is what my – you know, and which leads you, you know, right to my father, ends up being what this – what the whole experience was about. Because ultimately, a psychological – psychoanalytical relationship was formed, and we ended up being counselors to each other. You sort of going down the rabbit hole of my films and my work and all the stuff of synchronicity and dreams and all that stuff, and then reporting that back to me, giving me incredible psychological benefits. And then for me, being able to be, you know, someone who's worked as a professional artist in a lot of fields, to be able to hold you to the standards that you want to be held to, that also, I think, probably had some positive psychological benefits for you. And then ultimately, all of that is delivered into the product of the film that you created and that I got to participate in.
It's like creating a feedback loop, but instead of it being a negative thing, it's a loop where you're able to give each other feedback on each other's artwork. Very, very helpful. I know in any of our endeavors, it's really, I think, something Will expressed to me is a lot of people don't want to give feedback. You put something on Facebook and people say, you know, they'll click a like button or not, but, you know, or they'll say, oh, I really liked this. But as far as some sort of more meaningful critique or just to have the conversation about it, hopefully that's what we're doing here. We're creating a little bit of a feedback loop in that respect as well.
Well, I think that there's an idea. I think what we were able to get into is that there's, if you can get past, like, honestly, what was required for this to work was for both of us to have a sense of humor about ourselves. Like, I had to be open to letting Will go into all of these films that I'm not, a lot of them that I'm not particularly proud of, and, you know, elevate them and project all of his stuff onto it and make it into whatever he was going to make it into outside of me, you know. And he had to have a sense of humor about me correcting his, you know, mispronunciations, or, you know, like, sort of, with all due respect, some of the amateurish aspects of the filmmaking process that I think we were able to elevate just by him being willing to take, you know, direct criticism about direct things and not take it personally and turn that into being what the sink is about. That the sink is now about the conflict between two people, as opposed to the sink being about what we're creating. And in that process, having a sense of humor about someone telling you to maybe own your lips, girl.
Moving on.
So I just, saying that that's, you know, a sense of humor is key in working in these territories. And I want to go back to what you were saying about the political stuff, because on the level of what the film explores, if it really is exploring, I mean, what the film's one of its major point is that movies are dreams, and that there are a lot of like you said in your blog, which I thought was brilliant, there's a lot of different kinds of dreams. There are prophetic dreams, there are recurring dreams, there are prophetic movies, there are recurring movie themes. And of course, then the nightmare is going to creep in there, especially because I, as much as I resonate with the dreams because of my father, I resonate with the nightmare because that's really the kind of dream films I've been in. And the American nightmare, you know, it ends up, you know, with that shot to the head in 1963, you know, whether it leads to that or comes from that, that is like, you know, that's like one of those stargates, like Coetzee's 911 mega ritual. Like, that was probably the first mega ritual.
Well, I just feel
someone should write a book about that.
I know. I was just, as I was saying that, I was thinking, someone ought to do that.
You're lucky. You're just lucky enough that I'm actually doing that. Which reminds me.
Total sick!
I couldn't tell if you were doing that intentionally or not, but, you know, it's actually real. There is a really huge sink here. So I thought, you know, I've been doing this whole JFK, writing about JFK for the last number of months, and that's sort of where my head is. So I think it's really funny you guys are talking about JFK. Now, a story was brought to my attention. Do you know this Saturday, this is interesting to think, there was a man in Times Square who got shot by the police and killed, and his name was Kennedy.
Weird.
And so, you know, what happened for me is I'm watching, I've been doing all this research, and my wife comes home from the library with this, like, really weird. It's called The Kennedys. It's with Greg Kinnear as JFK. Let me tell you something. It's like 8 episodes long, so it's like six and a half hours.
That's
long.
The one with Katie Holmes as Jackie.
Yes, Katie Holmes as Jackie. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's a great flick, though.
Too much Greg Kinnear for my taste, but whatever. So it's just really funny. So she brings it home. We're watching it, and then the day after we watch this, Kennedy gets killed in Times Square. You know, we live here in New York, so it's just really interesting. It's like almost like we brought the Kennedy killing to us. So I just think it's really funny that you're talking about this, and you released this film.
And then the next day, this film was released.
Exactly. That's where I'm going with it. Hmm. Yeah. So
I feel like things that happen like Kennedy and like 9/11, I think if you want to be conspiratorial about this is how I see it. What happens subconsciously cannot be repressed. It cannot be repressed. It will come through. That is why we see things that relate to us in our dreams, that a psychoanalyst would sit down and say, well, I think that this dream means this or that. And that's why these things like the mega ritual by Katza and stuff like that come through when he analyzes movies with the archetypical lens of the WTC or 9/11 over his eyes, because if there is a conspiracy involving 9/11 or there is a conspiracy in JFK, it's going to show itself and it's our fiction. That does not necessarily mean that the perpetrators who pulled the trigger are the ones putting it into the fiction.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, so let's bring it back to this. It's like, you know, what we have an amazing opportunity to do here is to speak exactly to that phenomenon of where, you know, you're resonating with something in ways that it just seems to pick something out of the ether. And, let's say the filmmaker, your Danish filmmaker, might not know what your Chinese filmmaker was trying to do. Presumably, every artist is trying to do something original. You know, if you told any filmmaker, oh, you're making the same movie that's been, you know, you're telling the same story that's been told over and over and over again, a lot of those filmmakers are going to say, I'm going to try and break that mold. I'm going to try and do something different.
But I'll tell you, Rogan, who wrote The Attic Expeditions,
yeah.
I know that I'm pretty sure he'll be very happy to see that it's reflected here that the themes he was working on in his film that he wrote in the 90s and came out, you know, in 2000, 2001, you know, that 10 years later it shows up in Inception and Shutter Island as being like that he was, you know, he's just ahead of his time. He was in terms of playing with these ideas.
But I guess where I was going with that is to show that the films all the filmmakers seem to be picking up on something about you. And I wonder if you would speak to the way, like, essentially, Will's calling this a psycho-cinematic analysis. So presumably, if you're the patient, was his analysis of you correct? And therefore, was the filmmaker essentially correctly psychoanalyzing? Or however you want to phrase that, that they were picking up on something, whether they're picking up out of the ether or whatever it is, but there's an unintentional resonance with your own personal life. You know, you and I have already spoken about this, but I would hope you would speak to it for the record as far as how this actually plays out, that it's not just like Will's finding this reoccurring theme within your movies, but these are reoccurring themes within your life, that this was a correct analysis into an extent of you.
Yes, absolutely. But what's interesting, I mean, interesting from the standpoint of the, you know, the curse, may you live and have an interesting career, that what has, one of the things that's also consistent across all of my films is that in almost every film I've been in, I have been weirdly sort of screwed out of credit or being like the almost like I'm always, my picture's on the poster, but my name's not there, or my or the press release goes out and someone else's name is under my picture, or, you know, people, or the director decides he just hates me and will put and puts everyone else's name on the picture. Like, it's weird. So if they're, these directors are responding to me in a certain way, it's not in a way that's saying, okay, well, let's align him with dreams and mirrors and redheads and TV screens, because those are, reflect dreams, and his father's a dream psychologist, and I get that about him. It's more like, this weird, like, I cast this person who's also this weird magical imp. I want to put him in the box, and like, I don't want to deal, like, after this is over, I don't want to deal with whatever that brought up for me. And I think as I've grown older, I've realized that I think that has to do with my father's mojo that I inherited, something psychological mojo that makes one a projective figure. And when there isn't a good container for that, it can be confusing, because people don't like to see their shadow reflection show up in someone else. And that's what a psychologist or a shaman in other cultures does, is they hold your shadow reflection in a container that allows you to work with it and then go forward. And in the psychological container or in the shamanistic container, there are societal structures that hold that in place and make it work. But in the world realm of sort of B-movie celebrity, you know, it's no holds barred. And you know, this goes, I know we sort of skipped over this, but this goes to some of the conflicts and controversies I've been having in the sync community. And why I, you know, I'm a big proponent for a sense of humor, because that's the only container that I think works in sync, to in the world of sync, to allow for things not to turn into crazy negative projections like happened between me and Pinchbeck and Palmer and that whole controversy, which I know you guys don't want to touch on, so you don't have to respond.
That's fine to touch on it. I'll tell you a little sync that happened to me yesterday. Yesterday I downloaded, because I'm listening to a hell of a lot of Whitley Strieber right now, and I downloaded a conflict between Daniel Pitchbeck and Whitley Strieber. It was hilarity. It was hilarity. I mean, these two were at each other's throats. Whitley Strieber just downright saying that what Daniel Pinchbeck was saying was disgusting, but it reminded me of a whole bunch of the conflict that you two have. And you know, it's interesting because you're talking about reflections and stuff, and that was one of the major themes through all of your movies. Just about everything that you've done has weird mirror scenes. Not everything, but just about everything. But
I love also what you picked up on the mirrors and the names. You got to talk about that.
Well, the mirrors as far as the names go. For instance, you're in the movie Hurricane Festivals with, I believe his name is Derek Mears.
Yeah, who played Jason.
Yeah, but only in 2009. That's another thing. It's very serendipitous that I did this. I mean, you haven't really done anything since 2001. You had a small role in Every Day is a Journey in 2011, but you haven't done anything in 2001, so somebody could very well have done an analysis on all the movies that I did 10 years ago. However, all of the pieces would not fit until around this time period. And for instance, the guy that you're in with
Hurricane Festival.
At Hurricane Festival, you guys are traveling across country in this like Ken Kesey psychedelic bus is Derek Mears, who ends up playing Jason in 2009. And there's parts in there where he's got like a Freddy glove on, like playing with you and you guys are all friends and buddy buddies and you guys are traveling with the redhead across the country to go to this magic festival. But his name is Mears, which in where I'm come from, Alabama, I mean, Mears is Mears. His name is Mears. And there's a scene in there where you guys are talking together and he is in the mirror. You turn and look in the mirror to actually have a conversation with him, which is just baffling. Of course, there's another one in Far From Home. I know you'll be able to pronounce the director's name more than me, but his name is Mirit, I think. Mirit Avis?
Mirit.
Mirit. So again, with the mirrors.
Something that Will and I had talked about is the idea that if Jason Mears goes on to become to play Jason, that whole Friday the 13th,
Derek,
you know,
Mears.
Dark Mirror, but he's very much the Dark Mirror to Freddy Krueger, The Nightmare on Elm Street. It's like the King Kong and Godzilla, you know, are you a Jason fan or a Freddy fan type deal. But Jason in Friday the 13th, his name is Jason Voorhees, and one of your first TV roles is on Saved by the Bell.
With Larkin. Actually,
Good Morning, Miss...
Larkin with, Voorhees. Is her name Larkin? That's correct.
Lars?
Larkin. Or yeah. Lark or Lark Voorhees or something.
But,
that's like a whole nother issue.
Lisa Turtle. Her name, right. Her last name is the actress's name, last name is Voorhees. So she's, again, resonating with that same...
Lark Voorhees. Yeah. Right.
But I think that's... And I think that's what's really, really interesting about exactly what Will's saying, is that you could have done this film in 2002, but you couldn't have done it in 2002 because sync is like wine in that respect. The older it gets, the better it gets. You need context, and the more context it is, the better. And this is something, we haven't really talked about Radio 8 Ball, which is the show that I host, but that's really the idea, is the Radio 8 Ball is a show where we answer questions by picking songs at random and interpreting them like musical tarot cards, and we use live bands, we have celebrities, and you can look it up online. But the whole idea is that we record a synchronicity, and we date it, and it's very powerful at the time, but 10 years later, you could make a sync film out of any one question. If you just followed what happened to that band and what happened to that person who asked that question, and then, of course, me or whoever the host is, and you can really do this with anything. You could do this with a family photo as long as you have the context. And it just so happens that film, if it was a family photo that everyone could rent and look at and jerk off to, then it would have even more of the power of intention and focus.
Can I ask you a specific question? You were kind of, you mentioned the whole jerking off to. Can I ask you a very specific question? We had a conversation, this idea of being the focus, some sort of a psychic focus for a number of people. Now, you've experienced this at varying levels in your music career, your film career. But I'm wondering, like, we were talking about, like, Marilyn Monroe was actually the top of conversation. And, was sort of saying, if you're the focus of that much sort of psychic attention and almost like, not to be prudish about it, but like a sort of leeching or something like that.
But why is that leeching? I would say I suppose it can be leeching. It can also be celebratory. I guess it depends. I guess that says something about how you masturbate, sir.
No. Well, I'm saying for Marilyn, it didn't really seem to play out well. So it looked like it drained her, which is why I used the phrase leeching.
Celebrity drains.
Yeah, so I wouldn't necessarily use that phrase for masturbation. I'm saying for Marilyn, it seemed to have this major psychic toll on her. And then it sort of raised the question of what is the psychic toll of a president? You see the way presidents age in office, being that sort of, avatar for the psychic energy of millions of people. And then I raising the question, what must that be like for a porn star, a rock star, a whatever, to be the focus of all that psychic energy? And I just wondered if you would speak to that at all.
Well, I think there's probably some upside if you're getting paid well for it. And you have some agency and some control, you know, some level of control. I don't think that it's actually that that feedback loop is necessarily negative. Although something in this, the emerging thing for me in this conversation is that I'm starting to look at all of the ways that I would say that either that I have set up or that the world has conspired to keep my work on the margins so that I've been able, even though I've had to struggle with finances and other, you know, sort of real world issues, that ultimately the work has been able to play to an audience that's the future. Like, I think what's hard is if you have a huge amount of success before you've developed yourself as an artist and you have or as a human being, so you have a lot of attention focused on you that you don't know what to do with and you don't know why you have it and you don't know how to own it. And the people around you are not really supporting you in deepening and grounding, but are protecting their own. You know, you're in that political maelstrom that can be really toxic. But I think that's why, and I don't necessarily place myself among the great artists, but on this level, I'm playing the same game they are, is that the great artists play to the future. And a future audience, they can't hurt you as much, honestly. And that's really what Will's film has done. Like, Will is the future audience that these films were made for. And at the time, I had no idea why they were being made or why they felt like every time they were sort of screwing me out of credit and making sure that I was well hidden in the box.
Right. You were the buried treasure for Will to find. I mean, it seems like, you know, I've spoken to you about your film so many times and you're always saying, you know, bluntly that your career is basically shit. You said you don't want to watch your own movies. And it occurred to me that Will is sort of the cinematic alchemist coming along and turning your shit movies into, you know, elevating them to gold.
If I may, though, okay. I had to come to this project with that aspect of not relying on other people's opinions of Andras for the basis of my own opinion. I had to – I mean, when we were interacting – it was quickly apparent to me that he got it. And that was the one thing that I basically, when I started watching his films, I didn't know if he was going to understand what the hell I was talking about or if it even would be important to him. And when he did get it, I was very, very excited because all of a sudden I had a use, if that makes sense. But his insight on what would work and what wouldn't and his feedback was of the utmost importance. And I had to come to him with, like, you know, he's not below me. He is an individual who has important points of view as far as what will make this film work or what would make this investigation make more sense.
And you know what? Other than Steve Shainberg, who directed The Prom, you're the only director I've ever worked with who was strong enough in their own ego to engage me in that way. And that is one thing I want to say. I talk a lot of shit about my films, but one thing about this that this project has reminded me of is that I was in two really good films. One was The Prom that Steve Shainberg directed with me and Jennifer Jason Leigh, and Averill's Arrival. Of course, The Prom has never been released, and Averill's Arrival has only been seen in Germany, Austria, and Switzerland in a dubbed version with a German actor speaking for me. So once again, very well hidden.
By the way, I watched The Prom. I thought it was fantastic. I thought that was really good.
It's a beautiful film. And Steven Shainberg is one of the great he's a director who, in the future, people will really recognize as being something special. Between that and Secretary and Fur, his Deanne Arbus film. Yeah.
The Prom is, that's the one, if individuals have watched the video, that's the one where you're basically covered in a Rorschach test at the end of it. With the birthing or the rebirth before you get in bed with Jennifer Jason Leigh, another actress who should probably be pegged for a conspiracy if there is one. The Averill's
Arrival. So I always ask the question.
A conspiracy of awesomeness.
Go ahead, Doug. What'd you say?
I always have to ask the question because you always wink at it if there is. But it seems like
Because you shouldn't denounce it. That's this whole idea of taking a stance is silly to me. It's fucking stupid.
The stance, we ask the question to find out.
Well, there's a certainty that Andras Jones is not involved in a conspiracy. But to say that...
Unless it's a conspiracy from the future.
It is. I mean, there's a conspiracy between you and I. Perhaps this film basically influenced the making of your older films. I mean, this whole idea that time works one way is silly, too.
But there's also a thought that the universe gives you what you want sometimes. And so I wonder if there isn't a conspiracy.
As Kevin Halcott says, the conspiracy of all things.
Of self, that for your own psychological development, you have to get into the position that you're in.
Well, there.
Yeah, it's the Fibonacci conspiracy is what it is.
You have to understand Jung. That's the part in the film. You have to understand Jung.
We're running out of time, guys. We're in 40 minutes here.
Okay. Well, you have to understand Jung to understand.
Great. Let Will wrap up here because he's right on it.
You have to understand Jung to understand Andras Jones's career. You can look at it as far as symbolism as with Freudian symbols. That's great. But no, but you're not going to get the punchline unless you use Jung's theories as far as the collective unconscious goes. Then it makes sense. So it's interesting because that's the reason the title of the film makes or is what it is. Andras' whole career is this argument of Jung and Freud.
And that's why this – I think why this film – particularly what you're doing in it is we have crossed the next event horizon of sync, because at this point now you have the sync person, the sync filmmaker working with the subject. And if you put it into the context of a psychoanalytical relationship, then it has tremendous capacity to be healing for the artist, for both artists, and for anyone who has felt drawn to a certain actor or artist, but doesn't really know why. And an exploration like this brings that out. And this is sort of what I was working on with Jake Kotze when I had him making films for the celebrities who Skyped into the Radio 8 Ball show. And those films have been great. And I'm really, really looking forward to the next evolution of this. We probably shouldn't mention what it is, but Will and I are talking about collaborating on a film for another actor who it's going to be really awesome. I think we're really on to the next level of sync. So thanks for having us on.